The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and is still excited at actually seeing each other just a couple of days ago. I'm Kevin Day, here's Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. We had a lovely lunch, didn't we, Kieran, with two nice bottles of wine, which would have been a much better idea if you weren't a teetotaler. and I just hope producer Guy's ears have stopped burning.
Yes. In fact, we had to wear badges so that we recognised each other in the restaurant because it's been such a long time.
It's questions day, Kieran, and the first actually comes from a chap called Producer Guy from Moneytown in Goldshire. And he asks, how did you get hold of my credit card to pay for lunch? I'm not sure what he knows yet. We have some good questions today, Kieran, so let's crack on. And no news for once, which we're taking as good news.
Yes.
Derby County fans can step down. The first question comes from, Kieran, Scott Rees. And Scott says that his club, Swansea, have just dropped their youth system to grade two. Now, as a club who have been covering day-to-day losses by selling our best youth products, says Scott, how can this be a benefit? I understand the obvious reduction in running costs from a grade one to a grade two, but when we make so much from selling players and have a number of academy graduates in the first team, I can't see why we've done it.
Yes, it does appear to a certain extent to be a decision made on a short-term basis. The difference between a class one and a class two academy is quite significant. The running costs are around about $5 million a year for a class one and about $1.5 million for a class two. So there is a significant savings. You are also monitored by the authorities, by the grading authorities in terms of the provisions that are made to the young academy players. So, and the upkeep of the facilities is and expectations are far greater as well. At the same time, you've only got to, you know, unearth one nugget every couple of seasons, and it more than covers itself. But I think this is indicative of the crisis in finances, especially for clubs in the Championship at present, and B, as a result of our one of our old friends, the Elite Player Performance Plan (EPPP). Yeah. The larger clubs can now effectively snaffle your players whilst they're still academy players, you are given a fixed tariff in terms of the compensation, and some clubs have made the decision, well, you know, if we have a good player and he looks good at 14, we're going to lose him to a bigger club. We're going to get, you know, naff all money coming back. So that's why, you know, why bother?
What explains, Kieran, that $3.5 million drop in running costs then from a grade one to a grade two?
I think you have to increase the facilities available to the academy players. There's got to be greater investment in education. There's got to be a much broader curriculum on offer to the academy players because it is deemed to be an elite product, and you think about, you know, your club Palace, who've been in the Premier League for 8-9 years now, and you've only just moved up to Class One because you're being audited in effect as well. So you know you can expect a visit at any time So, you know, the compliance costs are quite considerable, and it's not just financial. You know, there's a lot of it, there's administrative burdens as well.
Yeah, I've got a meeting at our new academy and training ground next week. I can't wait, because if it's as nice as Steve Parish says it is, it's going to be lovely. And apparently the sandwiches are great as well. So are Swansea, Kieran, taking a gamble here that talent in Wales will still be attracted to them anyway?
Yes, they are. You know, they will still be in the, you know, in a significant radius around the Swansea area. You would think that they would be first choice. They just can't offer the same quality of facilities as before. And this is a function of no longer being in the Premier League. If you take a look at clubs in the Championship, if you're not in receipt of parachute payments, then you're probably looking at income in the region of, you know, perhaps 15 to 20 million a year. If a quarter of that is going out on an academy costs, yeah, that is pretty significant.
But as Scott says, it is a big risk, isn't it? Because of all the clubs in the Championship, Swansea, I would guess, are the team that are most likely to have young players in their first team. So if they're losing that potential recruitment tool, then they are looking at long term problems, aren't they?
Yes. But yeah, from their point of view, they can do all the hard work and then lose their players for next to nothing under the way. Yeah. You know, the system is geared towards making it easy for the big clubs to come in, snaffle players for next to nothing. And then they go into those big clubs' recruitment models. We discussed this. We've got clubs with 20 to 30 players out on loan from Premier League clubs, and they are making money on the back of that.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to excuse a slight frog in my throat, Kieran. I've had it since Friday lunchtime, amazingly. Ali spent the whole weekend saying, I think you probably need to take a COVID test. I was like, Ali, I know exactly why. I've got a sore throat and a headache. It's fine. I don't need to test for anything.
My Orangina didn't have the same impact on me.
Yeah, it was a slightly posh Orangina you had, wasn't it? It was water that the waiter added some kind of orange thing into, and it looked like a Cresta from the old days.
It's frothy, man. I used to love Cresta when I was a kid.
There we go again with the 70s references. Our next question comes from John O'Leary, who's an Everton fan, I presume. John says that Everton have just announced a strategic partnership with Sligo Rovers from the League of Ireland Premier Division. Could this be a way for Everton to sign younger EU nationals who no longer qualify for a work permit but could come to the club via the Republic? I suppose, Kieran, it could just be in the hope of finding another Seamus Coleman who they got from Sligo for €60,000, which is one of the bargains of the decade.
Yes. There's always been, you know, as somebody that works in Liverpool, there's always been a close connection between the city and Ireland, but, you know, culturally and geographically, and this is, some people might be offended by this, but, you know, as we used to say in my family, we come across regularly on the potato boat, and, you know, you know, Liverpool to Dunleary and Dublin was a common feature, you know, and that's how we used to refer to it. So those of you who are now writing letters of outrage, point out that, you know, I can say that I'm Irish.
Yes, Kieran, me, I'm writing a letter of outrage as we speak. How dare you? My mum used to say the cabbage boat, so there you go.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and then she'd also say things like, I'm not as green as I'm cabbage looking, which I never understood as a kid. But you just go, oh, okay, mum, fair enough. but no, there's always, of course. I mean, you only have to be in Dublin on a Saturday morning to see the amount of people from the island flying to London or Liverpool or Manchester for English football games, to know there's a huge link between the two countries and two sports.
Absolutely. So I think John's point does have a lot of validity. Having a link-up between Everton and Sligo Rovers allows Sligo, to a certain extent, to be a form of a holding area. If they do identify players, and remember there is still freedom of movement between the Republic of Ireland and the other countries in the EU, they could be brought across. In terms of getting what's referred to as a GBE, a governing body endorsement, the system, I think, is now operating quite smoothly, is my understanding. And it is a points-based system. Now, this season, Sligo Rovers have qualified for the UEFA Conference League. Yeah. And that is good for points. So you can see the rationale from Everton's point of view in that you know, Sligo, are, you know, they're a decent team. I think they're currently fourth in the League of Ireland. If they are regularly getting access to UEFA competitions, that's going to add to the points for any players there, and that would certainly make it easier to subsequently transfer those players across to England for Everton. So I think it's a sensible decision. That there's benefits for both sides, because Sligo will get access to Everton's sort of training and cultural facilities in terms of player development. And Everton will, you know, if they get one more Seamus Coleman out of it, then it's paid for itself, you know, 100 times over.
I'm ashamed to say, Kieran, talking of potential threatening letters, having spent half my childhood in Donegal, I never actually got to Sligo because it was the next county down, and therefore evil.
Yes,
basically. I remember saying to my mum, "I can see it from here, Mum. Can I just not wander over and have a look?" No, you probably won't come back. They'll sell you into some kind of Sligo child slave traffic. All right, I might have to go.
I was similar because my dad's family was from Tipperary, and we had a farm there. So I was driving a tractor from the age of nine, you know, collecting hay, milking cows, going to the. And I could drive a tractor to this is classic Irish country style. I was driving a tractor full of milk to the local dairy at the age of nine, and that was deemed to be perfectly normal.
Well, of course it was, Kieran, because at the age of nine, you were the only teetotaler in the family, I imagine.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're as you say, we're allowed to say these things. Paul Doddymead has the privilege, for now, of the final word on cryptocurrency, because we've discussed it a lot lately. To be perfectly honest, it still confusionates me. So I think we'll draw a veil, because Paul's question kind of ties up some of the loose ends. And for now, I think we'll end the Dalek money discussions. Paul says, if a Premier League player were to request part payment of salary in cryptocurrency, what would be the benefits and the risks?
Right. I think this is sort of based on what we've been seeing happen in the USA, where some of the American franchise sports, they have players who are requesting payments in cryptocurrencies. I suspect those players are also being sponsored privately by cryptocurrency companies who are trying to increase the legitimacy of cryptocurrency. The risks and the benefits for the players and the clubs is that it's a very volatile market. So if you're paying a player one Bitcoin per week, then you've got to go and pay for that, and you're going to have to pay for it in sterling or another currency potentially, unless you make a big investment. So from the club's point of view, they might have to pay more in order to pay the player a set fee, or equally, they may have to pay less. From the player's point of view, the value of what that cryptocurrency can buy, that goes up or down, because it's a bit like, you know, paying for things in a foreign currency here in the UK. You know, they go up or down, and it is unregulated. You could end up with a situation similar to Football Index, that, you know, ultimately its store of value is based on confidence in the system, and once the confidence starts to ebb away, the value can go very quickly with it. So, it's a gamble. It's as simple as that. You might as well go and pay people in lottery tickets.
See, I actually did a job once where I was paid in lottery tickets. That was a foolish idea. Strangely enough, Friday lunchtime idea. You'd be amazed. So are you suggesting, Kieran, if you talk about some of these American sports people maybe sponsored by cryptocurrencies, Wolves, for example, are one of the Premier League teams that have shirt sleeve sponsors from a cryptocurrency company. Are you suggesting that perhaps Wolves might be a club that would be interested or look to or be agreeable to paying some of their players in that fashion?
I think if all the parties were happy to go along with it, I can't see too much of a problem. And I think Watford are being paid in cryptocurrency by their cryptocurrency sponsor, or something similar to that. So we are seeing an increase in this, and from the football industry's perspective, as the relationship between football and gambling does appear to be drifting apart, because there is certainly pressure coming from central government and those people who are concerned about the consequences of gambling on young people, then could crypto fall into that vacuum? It certainly could. Are they likely to be the biggest payers in town? I think they could, because in my view, cryptocurrency is just a slightly different form of gambling. It was described to me by somebody senior in football as betting without a big B.
That's interesting. Well, I think the salient words in Paul's question are part payment, because everything I've recently from you, Kieran, and from Gavin, your chess cheat friend, expert in cryptocurrency. I can forgive Kieran, but I can't forget or forgive. words of the great Mark Lamour. Everything I've heard indicates that you would have to be a very, very confident or foolish to request your entire salary payment in cryptocurrency. So part payment, you kind of think, well, they're wealthy enough to take the gamble anyway.
Yeah.
And if it comes off, they're going to make a lot of money. But no one, I imagine, is demanding that their entire salary is paid in cryptocurrency.
No, because when you place your Ocado order, they'll be still asking for payment in sterling. So you're going to have to convert it into a hard currency at some point.
Yeah, it's going to be a long, cold day in hell, Kieran, before I start placing card orders. Dear, oh, lordy me. They're around your house so regularly, Kieran, I can tell when they're there, because it's the only time Findlay doesn't bark. I recognise this van. Tim Stevens asks a simple question, and that simple question is, what is the cost of a red card? Are players' wages garnished if they don't play? Is there a knock-on effect with sponsorships? This is the bit I find really interesting. So, for example, do Team Viewer get a refund if Cristiano Ronaldo is unavailable because he's suspended? And Tim actually said Bruno Fernandes, but I changed it to make it more topical.
You're down with the kids.
Yeah, it could be Cristiano. Our backlog is such it could be Cristiano Ronaldo from the last time, couldn't it? or Eusebio. Tim says, would there be additional clauses for serial offenders, for example? Think Joey Barton rather than Gary Lineker. Well, definitely not Gary Lineker. I believe he only ever got one yellow card in his career because he once told us he didn't care enough to foul anybody. But it's a question I've never thought. That's why one of the reasons I like these. As you know, every week I love questions that seem simple, but are so simple, we've never actually discussed them. So it's the sponsorship one I find really interesting. If Team Viewer are spending gazillions on sponsoring Man United and two of their star players are out for three, four games because of the red card, you'd think they would be slightly miffed about that, wouldn't you?
Whilst they would be miffed, I'm 99.99% certain that they would not be able to get any financial benefits from this, because it's the same as getting an injury. There's an element of chance with regards to that. In terms of Tim's comments with regards to the players, what we are seeing these days is, as far as players' contracts are concerned, they are heavily incentivized. So there are appearance bonuses, win bonuses, draw bonuses. You even get bonuses if you get on the bench. So therefore, the player is automatically penalized through having a one-match or three-match suspension from a red card. Yeah. And, of course, the danger is if you are a player who is perhaps not as certain of starting as either Bruno Fernandes or Cristiano Ronaldo, somebody comes in those three games, and some managers take the view that if they're playing well, you keep the shirt. You earn the right to keep the shirt. So it could actually have a longer term implication. But some contracts are quite complicated. So if we go back to one of my favourite footballers of all time, Mario Balotelli, in his contract that he had with Liverpool, he was entitled to a £1 million bonus if he was not sent off or he was not caught spitting at an opponent.
Well, that's good. That's sort of positive reinforcement. I like that.
That's right. And also, he mustn't have no more than 3 red cards in a season. So, yeah, Mario was an entertainer. I always loved the story of him driving down Deansgate in Manchester in an open top car, just throwing £20 notes at people. He's a genuinely lovely guy. Everybody I spoke to in Manchester when I was there was absolutely adored him because he genuinely cared.
Yeah, I always somebody once said to me exactly the same thing. But he's a lovely, lovely guy. Just don't look him in the eye. You'll be fine. I suppose from the sponsor's point of view, if in the unlikely event that Ronaldo is suspended for having a red card, he'd probably still be at the game anyway, wouldn't he? Doing the handshaking, the photograph stuff anyway.
Oh yes, the cameras always cut to the players, who are staring deeply and intently at their mobile phones for 90 minutes when they're not playing. So those elements of the of the deal will be applicable, but it could be that a player will have private contracts with personal sponsors, and those could be linked to appearances. Whilst Manchester United, I don't think, would lose out, the player with his personal contracts, that we have a good faith clause. You think about players like sports stars like Lance Armstrong and Tiger Woods, when they've got into difficulties, shall we say, their sponsors ripped up the contracts.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by The Price of Football online course, hosted by our very own Kieran Maguire. Kieran, tell us more.
Well, Kevin, it's some friends of mine who couldn't afford the Swiss Ramble. So therefore, they decided instead to create The Price of Football course. So it's a 6-week online course starting on the 20th of September, and it's been designed for anybody who wants to potentially get a career in the football industry through a combination of quality education, but also networking. It's really important that you get to know people in the industry because it is a small industry. So it includes 6 hours of weekly study material and a 90-minute mentoring session every week on topics like governing bodies, clubs and investors. I might manage to sneak a bit about amortization in about it as well. So they've asked me to be one of the tutors. So you will see me, or perhaps hear me, or failing that, perhaps they'll see and hear Finlay. And you'll also get the option to attend the World Football Summit in Madrid, though I suspect that will be virtually.
It sounds wonderful, Kieran. It does sound genuinely interesting and a very good way to launch your career. I also like the fact that you're more likely to be tutored by Finlay than you are by me. if you are listening to this and you'd like to launch your career in the football industry with Kieran, and who better, let's face it, to help launch your career in the football industry, head to www.sportstalentnetwork.com for more information.
And I also believe you can get an early bird 33% discount at the moment. So go to www.sportstalentnetwork.com to sign up, and perhaps I'll see you on the course, and Finlay as well.
One of the few times I saw the normally genial Roy Hodgson really angry was when somebody asked him about players and mobile phones, and then made it worse by asking them about players getting off the team coach with headphones on. Roy wasn't happy with the modern world that day. Now, Kieran, you know better than anybody,
I know what's coming,
Kieran,
next.
You know that legally we were obliged to rethink our top 10 wrong-uns list, as you recall, as it turned out that there's a grey area with us actually stating that people who listened to the pod were wrong as well. I don't think any lawyer, Kieran, would keep this question out of your top 10 list. This question comes from Merrick Boosfield. I hope I've pronounced your name correctly, Merrick, because it deserves to be pronounced properly, because you've made Kieran a very happy man. So happy, in fact, Merrick. You'll be pleased to know, Merrick, that Kieran even mentioned it at lunch. It was one of the reasons I ordered the second bottle, to be perfectly honest. This is the question. Merrick says, now that the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy has published the consultation document on restoring trust in audit and corporate governance, do you think the definition of public interest entities should be expanded to include football clubs? Now, Merrick, I'm not saying I lost interest in Kieran's discussion, but let's just say I now know the dessert menu by heart in that particular restaurant. But it's I get the gist of the question, Kieran. I understand that this report has been going on, and it seems that there's a lack of trust in audit and corporate governance, which is being restored. So should a football club be included as a public interest entity, Kieran? And let's remind me what it is. It's been three long days and more bottles of wine since you explained.
Right. The reason why this has come about is we've had a lot of corporate scandals, companies going bust. And there's a viewpoint, Kevin, that there's a rather cosy old boys network between the people in the boardroom, the auditors, the corporate lawyers, the bankers, and it's all sort of, uh-huh. let's meet at such and such a club and shake hands and approve everything going through with a nod and a wink and a few bottles of red. This has led to corporate entities going down the wrong routes, scandals, financial, and people losing out. So there's the government is saying, do we need to address this? And it's going through a very, very long, very serious process. We've had the white paper. But it's a case of, if we're going to up the standard of monitoring companies, which companies should we include? So, if you've got shares which are being traded on a stock exchange, you or I, via our pensions, by the way, are investors in those companies. So, I think we're entitled to know, and we've got people who are private investors as well. It should include all financial institutions, because you put faith. When you put money into your bank account, and when I mean you, I'm talking to producer Guy here.
Thank you. Yeah, crack on.
When producer Guy puts money into his bank account, he does it in the good faith that the money's going to be there when he wants to take it out. So therefore, banks should be monitored. Then we move into the private companies. And there's, British Home Stores, for example, BHS, went bust a few years ago. It was a private company. Lots of people lost their jobs. I think there was a view taken that perhaps it could have been run a little bit better. So what I think Merrick is suggesting is, should football enter that particular realm? Now, my view, and I have been critical of the governance, is that I am very uncomfortable about the old boys network in football. If we go back to why did we start this podcast? We started this podcast on the back of Berry. EFL commissioned a report into what went wrong with Berry, and the recommendation was that there should be independent directors. And the EFL said, "Sod that for a game of soldiers. We're sticking to the old boys network." And why wasn't there a report into what happened at Macclesfield? It's because the EFL managed to get rid of Macclesfield from the EFL a few weeks before the club went bust. And we all know what was driving that. So, I'm not happy about the level of governance in the game. At the same time, do I think that the BIES rules should extend to football. I don't, and the reason for that is that the compliance costs of monitoring and keeping up to date with the demands would simply be too high, and the industry doesn't have the resources to do it.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I find this fascinating, fascinating in inverted commas, let's put that. For a start, but every time, in fact, just on the last pod, I can't remember which club it was, but you talked about a club's accounts being unaudited, and every time you say that, I point out, because Guy likes me to do so, that legally a club's accounts don't have to be audited. But I also point that out because I'm still constantly surprised that accounts for any organisation of a certain size can go unaudited, because you'd imagine that the club, the shop, the department store would want their accounts audited, and you can only assume that if they don't, it's because they're dodgy, which is not to imply that the club we were talking about last week's accounts are dodgy, but you'd think it would be in their best interest, and also you'd think that if there are problems down the line, they can say, well, actually, the accounts were audited, so as far as we knew, everything was in order.
Yeah. Well, 99% of company accounts are unaudited.
99%?
99%, yeah. So, and that does not mean that 99% of companies are dodgy. The benefits of having your accounts audited is A, HMRC are probably less likely to investigate, you know, because they're probably a bit more confidence. And if you go to a bank and you say, here's my company accounts, will you lend me money on the strength of that? And, the bank manager says, well, they're unaudited and they've been prepared in crayon. You know, I'm probably not going to lend you money on that back. So, you know, it does give it a kite mark, but at the same time, it's a costly experience. So I can understand clubs who are, you know, they're living from, you know, hand to mouth at present, as we know, not necessarily wanting to go down that route. They are still subject to investigation by the Football Authority. So, you know, both the Premier League and the EFL could turn up and say, we just have a bit of a closer look, or we want to check some of the numbers. So they are still potentially available to scrutiny, and that's where we stand at present. The number of companies, in fact, the audit regime has been reduced, certainly during my lifetime as somebody who is in theory an accountant or. But that's because the other entities will normally say, if you want to borrow money from us, or if we've got a tax dispute, we suggest you get a professional advisor, and that could end up costing the company more money in the long term.
I can 100% confirm that bank managers don't like stuff in crayon. Paul Salvin is a worried Borough fan. Paul says that Middlesbrough's accounts for last year up to June 30th, 2020 showed that we lost a staggering £35 million just 3 months into the pandemic. How bad are the accounts going to be for 2021? Now, we rarely worry about Borough, Kieran, because I think we assume that, very long-term owner Steve Gibson will resolve any short-term financial issues.
Well, yes, because that's what he's always done in the past. And if you take a look at his haulage company called Gibson O'Neill, that's actually quite a successful organisation in its own right, which has always managed to subsidise the football club. I think that Paul's right to raise, you know, a bit of concern about Borough. If you take a look at its accounts for the last 10 years, in seven of those years, wages have been bigger than revenue. And the only 3 years when it wasn't was, the year that Borough were their season in the Premier League, and the two following seasons when they had the benefit of parachute payments. They were in a mess certainly in 2020. Wages were 160% of revenue.
Wow.
And Steve Gibson probably did not help himself in, I think it was 2017-18. Borough had just been relegated to the Championship, and he said, "We're going to smash it. We're going to go straight back up."
Yeah.
And he spent £66 million on new players that season. And if you do that and you go straight back up, fine. If you do it and 3 years later you're in the Championship, it's a big word in football these days, you've got legacy costs, because the players you're signing normally would be on 3-, 4-, 5-year contracts, and you're committed to those high wages. So I think for 2021, it will be a tough year for Borough. I think after 2021, paradoxically, they've been through that smash it season, and then they retrench. Then they realise, well, yeah, even Steve Gibson, who's a very generous benefactor, and a huge fan of Derby County, by the way.
I knew you wouldn't be able to resist that.
there is actually a Derby story, but we're going to hold it back to Wednesday or Thursday.
Oh, are we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Oh, I look forward to that. Well, I don't know if I look forward to that or not. Our next question from Fiona Alder is a cracker. It's a real cracker, this question, Kieran. It's just sheer coincidence that Fiona happens to be my sister-in-law and is almost single-handedly responsible for our huge army of listeners in the States where she lives. Seriously, she recommends us to everyone that she meets in America, Kieran. Actually, she tells everyone to listen, but Fiona has a certain manner which suggests that not listening is not the right option.
She got a word with my Uncle Terry.
She probably... I wouldn't put a bet on which one would come out first, to be perfectly honest, Kieran. Anyhow, the lovely Fiona Alder says, thinking about football history, was it always the case that football clubs lost money? Going back 40 years and more, did the same financial struggle exist? If not, what changed to make the financials of most clubs so tenuous? I'm going to guess, Kieran, that you all say the 20th of February 1992. And on a similar note, Zeeshan Hamid asked whether historically English titles and European Cups were always won by the teams with most money to spend on transfer fees and wages as they are now. Now, Fiona, I know you listen to our pod, and it's lovely that you do so. It's brilliant. Just so you know, I would have put your question first. That producer guy put his foot down. He said he didn't care who you're related to and would happily say so to your face. I didn't tell him that you're in England at the moment. am I right in saying that you will say what changed will be the formation of the Football League, which happened on the 20th of February 1992, the Premier League?
Premier League. That is certainly one of the big events. I think there are two issues. First of all, there was the creation of the Premier League, which effectively hived off the TV monies to the 20. It was 22 clubs to begin with.
It was,
If we take a look at Liverpool's accounts, so I've got the accounts from 1989-90 in front of me. The club used to break even in those days. As you know, some clubs might have a small loss, but if, you know, losses were measured in thousands rather than millions in those days. It was because Liverpool's total revenue in 1989-90 was only £10 million. We've now got players on wages which are more than £10 million. Yes, yeah. Individual players. So there has been a major transformation. So that's one issue. The other issue, and this is something which we did actually discuss at lunch on the other day, was the distribution of money between divisions. And prior to the Premier League, it was 50, 25, 12.5, 12.5 in terms of TV money. But also going back before that, match day income used to be split between the home and the away club. So, we now have situations where Spurs' match day income is £120 million, and you've got clubs whose match day income will be as low as five. So we've got a gap between the divisions. We've got a gap within the division, and people ultimately, in terms of the fan-led review, I think what the key question people have got to work out is, what exactly do we want from football in terms of it being a competitive sport? Because if you just address the issue of TV rights, it's ignoring the fact that some clubs have a further financial benefit through bigger stadia and bigger commercial deals, or do we say, well, ultimately, they're private companies, they're global brands, and they are entitled to keep all of their money for themselves? There are big questions to be asked, and I think there's perhaps, in my view, there's too narrow a focus just on TV money, which certainly doesn't help the situation we have. The gap between the Premier League and the Championship, and the Championship and League One are problematical, and they encourage the overspends which Fiona refers to. So losses are, especially losses in the Championship, as soon as that incentive to get up to the Premier League started to widen in terms of the gap, in terms of the EFL TV deal and the Premier League TV deal, then clubs started to gamble. And you gamble on the back of Paul's question about Borough, you gamble by spending money. Yeah. Looking at Zishan's question, he's absolutely right. I did actually prepare a spreadsheet a few weeks ago, which showed that we go all the way back to the formation of the Premier League. It's always been connected. Success in terms of winning the league has been closely connected to wages.
That's interesting. What about before the Premier League then? Because we always talk about clubs like Derby and Nottingham Forest succeeding. So would that have been the same case then? Would they have been?
It was less of an issue because you actually had a greater variety of clubs winning the league. But if you look at Forest's accounts, remember Forest were the first club to pay £1 million
indeed,
a player in terms of ray of sunshine, Trevor Francis.
Yes. we did discuss this at lunch the other day, Kieran, but I wouldn't like people listening to this to think that the only purpose of our lunch was to discuss things that we talk about on the podcast. We talked about a wide range of things, you and I. TV from the 70s, music from the 70s.
Yeah,
we talked about a lot of things from the 70s, basically. Kieran Simmons has our penultimate question. And Kieran says, on my last few trips over to watch Birmingham City play, I noticed that even the substitutes were sponsored, to which the fans amusingly sing, "Who are you?" It could be recommending my book, to be honest. Kieran says, is there anything on a match day in English football that isn't allowed to be sponsored? In League of Ireland games, even the match ball is sponsored. Certainly at Selhurst Park, corners and added time are sponsored. I live in fear, Kieran, of the day that English football shirts are like French ones, with every inch covered in sponsorship and adverts. But are there rules that prevent certain things being sponsored? I mean, referees are sponsored in Scotland, aren't they? So I presume there's no reason why corner flags, centre circles can't be sponsored.
Yeah, everything is up for grabs. Certainly we've got stadium stands, shirts. Now, yeah, what's going to happen in terms of shorts? It's, in other sports, it's allowed. The I think the FA, the Premier League, and the EFL do have very strict rules as to the size of sponsorship logos on shirts. And I think that's probably done in conjunction with their broadcast partners as well. But you know, there's nothing to stop. You know, the blog's greengrocer's penalty spot is the ball's now being put on it,
yeah.
And you know, somebody's going to score or miss a goal from it. So no, there's nothing in theory, but there are, as far as what happens on the pitch, there are restrictions. Because if you think about it, you know, we both watch rugby and cricket as well, and you quite
Whoa! We both watch cricket, Kieran. I will be getting angry letters from people who know me if you suddenly reveal that I watch handball foul.
Oh yeah, I watch the old Six Nations game. It's normally.
Oh yeah, okay. I watch that if it's on and there's no cartoons on the other side. I'll watch the rugby and very amusingly shout handball foul every time they pick the ball up, which drives my mate Gloucester Dave and drives him up the wall. You can't see the ball, Kieran. I prefer a sport where you can see the actual ball.
Yes, I think it's a crazy sport, but you know, it's I've done the accounts for a rugby club in Trafford for the last 30 years, and the work they do with the local communities is absolutely amazing. So, you know, it's a strange sport, but it's in terms of discipline, I think football could learn a few things from it, and also football could not learn a few things from it as well.
Yeah, I'm, Kieran, second to none in my admiration for any sports club that does work in the community. I disagree with you on the discipline front, as I find it slightly sinister that grown men stand in front of the referees like public schoolboys in front of the headmaster. But there you are. Crazy golf. Why isn't that more crazy golf on telly? Fishy. I'd watch that. Fishy. I find myself watching golf increasingly, Kieran, as I can't be asked to go to the countryside anymore. So I just watch golf for the scenery.
but going back to Kieran's question, Could you have logos on the pitch?
Yeah, well, I mean, in cricket they have what look like logos on the pitch, but are TV tricks. So why does that not happen in football? I mean, at half time, I'm amazed that hasn't been considered before, especially now that every single sport has an obligatory drone shot, overhead camera shot. I'm amazed that parts of the pitch aren't being sponsored.
I think we need a secret broadcaster to help us answer questions of this nature.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's one of the reasons we had lunch, wasn't it? Oh, yeah. I'm not cut out for this sort of game, Kieran. Our last question comes from Chris Weeks, except it's not a question, is it, Chris Weeks? What have I said before in the past about trying to get free consultation from the country's leading football finance expert in the guise of an innocent request for information? Chris says, over the last 20 years, my club Darlington has lost our beloved ground at Feetham's, spent a number of years playing at a 25,000-seat stadium before it broke us financially, and have since reformed as a fan-owned club and are back in town sharing with a rugby club. Without a rich benefactor, which with our constitution as a fan-owned club is improbable, are there any novel funding sources you suggest we could explore to develop the ground to Football League standards and help get us back to where we hope to be? Now, as you're a fan-owned club, Chris, I'm nodding this through. Anyone else? And Kieran starts invoicing. Which, by the way, Kieran, I've recently learned from my accountant, you're supposed to do for everything.
Yes.
No idea you meant to do it for every job you did. He was quite adamant on the subject as well.
In terms of Darlington, what I'd suggest they do is they perhaps get in contact with our good friends at AFC Wimbledon, because we've got the Don's Bond, where effectively it's a form of crowdfunding where you can lend money to the football club. They will pay you not a high rate of interest, but this is actually being used as part of the development and return to Plough Lane. A ground I would like to return to, because on the one trip which I did have there, which I think was about 84, 85, which was a Tuesday night against the crazy gang. It was without doubt the most unpleasant toilets in the history of football, and that, yeah, and we're talking,
wow,
yeah, yeah. That's the challenge, but yeah, that was the only memory of the place. So I'm hoping things have improved since then. I'm sure they have, of course.
It's a brand new stadium, Kieran. I think even in these days of nostalgia, they'd be slightly foolish to bring the old toilets back. I was seeing the toilets away at Fulham used to be shocking. It was basically four breeze block walls. Plough Lane, so I used to love going to Plough Lane as a Palace fan because it was literally the only stadium we could be superior about. Yes. But it's a good... I think there is a slight difference between Wimbledon and Darlington, Kieran.
Yeah.
Wimbledon had a lot of high-end benefactor fans when they first came through. It's in a wealthy... Obviously, it's a South London club, but it's you know, they're not far from the wealthy stockbroker belt. So they started, I think, probably from a financially better base than Darlington are possibly at the moment.
Yes, yes. And in terms of crowdfunding, getting local support from local businesses, trying to turn it into more of a 365-day-a-year revenue-generating ground. So, the next step is to improve your conference facilities, hospitality facilities for corporates and so on. So that's one route to go down. I think the Darlington story is a fascinating one, and we've seen what's happened at Wrexham. They've spent a lot of money now in the National League in terms of player recruitment on the back of the Ryan Reynolds link. And they're getting a documentary on that. Well, yeah, what happened at Darlington, Feetums, was it George Reynolds, the safe breaker?
Indeed, yeah, convicted safe breaker. So, Guy, you don't have to worry about that. He was definitely a convicted safe breaker.
Yeah, so he created the Reynolds Bowl, I believe.
Indeed.
And I know things haven't worked out as the fans would have ideally liked since then. So is there a potential story there? Netflix will make a documentary on most things these days, as but not a football finance podcast as yet, sadly.
I think
who would play the part of you, Kevin?
Well, as we know, Kieran, because we've discussed this many times, having not got the part of as myself in Ted Lasso, it's an interesting question, isn't it? It would be somebody who was once ruggedly good looking, but has possibly put on a bit of weight during some kind of lockdown. I don't know. Phil Jupitus. I'll go with Phil Jupitus. I always liked Darlington's kit as well. Black and white hoops.
It was
a classy kit. I think the trouble is with Chris's question, and it sounds trite, but the way to make money is to be successful, isn't it? To win things. So it's a kind of dragon eating itself thing, isn't it? The heads in the tail. It's like you need the money to be successful, but you need to be successful to make the money. So it's a hard one. Because they were, they still are, a club in a proud footballing area.
But
perhaps we should put it to our listeners. So if any of our listeners have got imaginative, interesting ways of... If only Uncle Terry was still with us.
Yes.
He'd just make a couple of phone calls, get in the car, his fence.
Well, he's probably got George Reynolds on speed dial.
Oh, no. Yeah, that helps. So, Chris, thank you for your question. If you have any questions for us, for our pod, we will try and get to them as quickly as possible. Where are we in the decade at the moment? Might be a while. It's questions@priceoffootball.com. And obviously, if you'd like to make a small contribution to our always free to air podcast, then you can do it at patreon.com/priceoffootball. And while you're doing that, I shall leave you in the capable hands of Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thanks again for all the kind words, folks. We do appreciate the feedback. We do try to keep things as correct as possible, but you keep us on the straight and narrow, which, given my family background, is quite a challenge. if you want to give us some good karma, we don't want to go down the Patreon route. Yeah, we appreciate financial circumstances may determine that, and many other reasons as well. If you could go to the Apple podcast app, follow us on that, and if you could give us a review, give us 5 stars. It helps us in and myself and Kevin. We don't run businesses. We're not like producer guy, but producer guy always tells us. It helps the business side of things, boys. So make sure you mention it.
That's one of the biggest understatements you've ever said. Just the thought of you and I running, you'd be great at running a business. I'd be, any business I ran would have a brilliant first 3 weeks. The employees would be the happiest employees in the world, and then suddenly they'd be boarded up. And can I just point out as well that producer guy is not quite as philosophical about being paid in karma as you are. The look on Guy's face when you offer him karma instead of cash.
Well, I could say it's a form of cryptocurrency. You might be interested in that one.
Oh, that's a really good idea. That's great. I wonder who the first footballer would be who wants to be paid in karma. Julian Speroni, he would have been happy being paid in karma.
Right.
If anyone deserves good karma, it's that man. So I'm going to start welling up now, Kieran, if we start talking about Julian Speroni. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.